Hello, and welcome to Tech Talk. Your reader will be Paul Henkel, and your articles will come from the New York Times Technology section. Article number one, lithium-ion batteries work earns Nobel Prize in Chemistry for three scientists. John B. Goodenough, M. Stanley Whittingham, and Akiro Yoshino were recognized for research that has laid the foundation of a wireless, fossil fuel-free society. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences on Wednesday awarded the 2019 Nobel Prize in Chemistry to three scientists who developed lithium-ion batteries, which have revolutionized portable electronics and are very likely powering a device you're using now to read this article. Larger examples of the batteries have given rise to electric cars that can be driven on long trips, while the miniaturized versions are used in life-saving medical devices like cardiac defibrillators. John B. Goodenough, M. Stanley Whittingham, and Yukiro Yoshino will share the prize, which is worth about $900,000. Lithium-ion batteries are a great example of how chemistry can transform people's lives, said Bonnie Charpentier, president of the American Chemical Society. It's wonderful to see this work recognized by the Nobel Prize. The three researchers' work in the 1970s and 80s led to the creation of powerful, lightweight, and rechargeable batteries used in nearly every smartphone or laptop computer and in billions of cameras and power tools. Astronauts on the International Space Station rely on them, and engineers working on renewable energy grids often turn to them. By storing electricity generated when sunlight and wind are at their peak, lithium-ion batteries can reduce dependence on fossil fuel energy sources and help lessen the impact of climate change. M. Stanley Whittingham, 77, a professor at Binghamton University, State University of New York, and one of the three winners, said that he always hoped lithium-ion technology would grow, but we never envisioned it growing this far. We never imagined it would be ubiquitous in things like iPhones. John B. Goodenough, 97, is a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. With the award, he becomes the oldest Nobel Prize winner, but is still active in research. And Yukiro Yoshino, 71, is an honorary fellow for the Asahi Kasei Corporation in Tokyo and a professor at Meijo University in Nagoya, Japan. He said after the announcement that he was pleased that the technology could also help fight climate change, calling lithium-ion batteries suitable for a sustainable society. Ever since Alessandro Volta invented the first true battery in 1800, scientists have tried to find ways to get electrons to flow from a negative electrode called an anode to a positive electrode called a cathode. Volta did this by stacking disks of copper and zinc and linking them with a cloth soaked in salty water. When wires were connected to the disks to complete a circuit, the battery produced a stable current. In subsequent decades, versions of these batteries powered telegraphs and other devices. The first rechargeable battery came about in 1859. These were made from lead acid and are still used to start gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles today. But lead-acid batteries were bulky and heavy. Nickel-cadmium batteries, which were less efficient but more compact, were invented in 1899. For many years, there were no major advancements in battery technology. But the Arab oil embargo of 1973 made many scientists realize the extent of society's dependence on fossil fuels. Dr. Whittingham, who was working with Exxon at the time, began searching for improved ways to store energy from renewable sources and power electric cars. He knew that lithium would make a good anode because it released electrons easily. It also had the advantage of being the lightest metal. So Dr. Whittingham started looking for materials that had a high energy density and captured lithium ions in the cathode, the side of your battery with the plus sign. Dr. Whittingham discovered that titanium disulfide, which had never been used in batteries before, had a molecular structure that let lithium ions into small pockets. This resulted in the first functional lithium battery. The big advantage of this technology was that lithium ion stored about 10 times as much energy as lead acid, or 5 times as much as nickel cadmium, Dr. Whittingham said. Lithium ion batteries were also extremely lightweight and required little maintenance, so there was a huge incentive to move to lithium ion. Unfortunately, Dr. Whittingham's new battery had a problem. When it was repeatedly charged, thin strands of metallic lithium would grow out from the negative electrode. Sometimes the strands would grow long enough that they reached the cathode and short-circuited the battery and could cause an explosion. Dr. Goodenough, then at Oxford, predicted that lithium-ion batteries would have greater potential if the cathode were made with a different material. He noticed that cobalt oxide was similar in structure to titanium disulfide. It could tolerate lithium being pushed into it and pulled out over and over. It also made the lithium-ion battery almost twice as powerful as Dr. Whittingham's. The battery now generated 4 volts. Building from Dr. Goodenough's work, Dr. Yoshino, who was at the Asahi Kasei Corporation in Japan, then showed that more complicated carbon-based electrodes could house lithium ions in between their layers too. This eliminated pure lithium from the battery entirely. Instead, the system used only lithium ions, which are safer. These developments ultimately led to commercialization of the lithium-ion battery in 1991 by another Japanese electronics giant, Sony Corporation. The compact nature and reliability of lithium-ion batteries made the technology a staple in electronics that had once been powered primarily by disposable batteries that consumers always seemed to run out of at the wrong time. That included radios, handheld gaming devices, laptop computers, and eventually smartphones and wearable computers. But the technology has its flaws, too. There is a limited number of times that a lithium-ion battery can be replenished before it deteriorates and can no longer hold a charge. In addition, a faultily designed lithium-ion battery can turn into a miniature bomb. Some of the biggest tech products recalls have involved battery defects. In 2006, Dell recalled 4.1 million laptop batteries because they could erupt in flames. More recently, Samsung Electronics recalled and discontinued the Galaxy Note 7, its flagship smartphone, after several reports of the device exploding. Technologists often point to lithium-ion as an innovation roadblock. While computer chips have doubled in speed every few years and digital displays have become significantly brighter and sharper, tech companies have made only incremental improvements on batteries. There is not much that engineers can do beyond making the batteries bigger and implementing software algorithms to make hardware more power efficient. Despite the hiccups, companies continue to rely on the batteries because they can be cheaply and reliably reproduced. They have also been scaled up for use in larger settings. Energy storage, most often using lithium-ion battery technology, is widely seen as necessary for transforming the electric grid to a carbon-free system and combating the effects of climate change. Most electricity in the United States and in many other parts of the world come from fossil fuel sources, predominantly natural gas, but also coal. Battery technology helps replace those carbon-emitting sources because it allows power companies to store excess solar and wind power when the sun does not shine nor the wind blow, the weakness of those carbon-free sources. The most critical area for the electric grid has been providing power when people return home from work during the summer and turn on their air conditioners, cook dinner, and wash clothes, when utilities often rely on natural gas plants designed to meet those periods of high demand, known as peaking plants, which typically are more expensive. What's exciting about lithium-ion technology is it has the power to unlock the sun 24/7 to really help renewable energy power our future in a way that we haven't been able to capture until now, said Bernadette Del Cairo, executive director of the California Solar and Storage Association and Industry Group. The potential of battery technology is highlighted in Northern California, where Pacific Gas and Electric is shutting off power to hundreds of thousands of customers on Wednesday because of the risk of wildfires. Some of their neighbors who have combined solar and battery systems can continue to meet their technology needs. From a high level, lithium-ion batteries have increased reliability, they've enabled greater renewable penetration, they've reduced the reliance on centralized power, said Ed Fenster, co-founder and executive chairman of Sunrun, one of the largest residential solar companies in the United States. They're going to do to the electric grid what the PC did to the mainframe computer. But while the batteries can be a part of the solution for reducing fossil fuel use, they have also resulted in other problems around lithium extraction and waste. More than half of lithium is gathered using brine extraction from deep inside the earth, especially in South America, and the result is still mined traditionally from rock. Both methods have caused environmental damage to areas around lithium processing operations. And as the demand for lithium increases, companies may resort to using energy-intensive heating to speed up brine evaporation. Some lithium sources could also be over-extracted. Once lithium-ion batteries are used up in electronics, they are often disposed of improperly by consumers. Less than 5% of lithium-ion batteries are collected and recycled in the United States, according to the Department of Energy. If you think about batteries in cell phones, most of them are thrown away and end up in landfills, said Alex Gershow, a chemist at New York University. While some companies that make smartphones and other devices have attempted to improve their recycling records, dismantling the batteries and removing the metal for reuse involves another high-temperature melting and extraction process. It is not just economical, Dr. Gershow said. Scientists have experimented with new power technologies that use alternate methods to replenish batteries, like pulling energy from the air or through radio signals. But any potential successor to lithium-ion would have to undergo rigorous safety tests before being introduced to the public. Who won the 2018 Nobel Prize for Chemistry? The prize last year went to Francis H. Arnold and George P. Smith, both of the United States, and Gregory P. Winter of England for work that tapped the power of evolutionary biology to design molecules with a range of practical uses, such as new drugs, more efficient and less toxic reactions in the manufacture of chemicals, and plant-derived fuels to replace oil, gas, and coal extracted from the ground. Now, for article number 2. After sparring, NASA and SpaceX declare a shared mission. The space agency's administrator, Jim Bridenstine, met Elon Musk at SpaceX headquarters on Thursday to review progress towards launching NASA astronauts. A visit by the NASA administrator to a rocket factory is usually a predictable show-and-tell of the latest gadgets destined for outer space. But there may have been some tension below the surface on Thursday when the current administrator, Jim Bridenstine, stopped by the headquarters of SpaceX, the private rocket company of the billionaire Elon Musk, in Hawthorne, California. SpaceX is a major contractor for NASA. Mr. Bridenstine and Mr. Musk had been exchanging nettlesome messages for the past 2 weeks. Thursday's visit might have been as much about smoothing over ruffled feelings as viewing space hardware. Taking questions from reporters, both men were complimentary toward each other and said they shared the same goals: to launch NASA astronauts to the International Space Station on SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule as soon as possible, but not before the spacecraft has passed all of the needed tests. "We're honored to partner with NASA to make this happen," Mr. Musk said. "This is a dream come true, really." The relationship between NASA and SpaceX has sometimes been fractious. The two are frenemies, odd, codependent bedfellows with shared dreams of pushing outward into the solar system, a cantankerous couple that cannot live with or without each other. Absent NASA's help and contracts over the past 13 years, SpaceX would not have become a powerhouse dominating the business of launching satellites to orbit. In return, SpaceX offers NASA cheaper costs for taking cargo, and in the coming months, perhaps astronauts to the space station. But Mr. Musk has sometimes complained that NASA's meticulous safety reviews were holding SpaceX back, while Mr. Bridenstine appeared to be wondering whether Mr. Musk's dream of future Mars colonies was distracting the company from obligations to NASA. What was the source of the NASA-SpaceX dispute? 2 weeks ago, as Mr. Musk prepared to give an update on Starship, a giant spacecraft that he hopes could travel to Mars sometime in the next decade, Mr. Bridenstine posted a message on Twitter suggesting that SpaceX needed to pay more attention to its contract with NASA to to launch astronauts to the space station aboard the Crew Dragon spacecraft. Instead of building and operating its own spaceships as NASA did for the space shuttles, which were retired in 2011, the agency has now turned to SpaceX and Boeing to provide the transportation of astronauts. Both Boeing and SpaceX are behind schedule in this commercial crew program, and their first crewed launches will probably not occur until sometime in 2020. Adding to the tension are the years of delays and cost overruns in the development of NASA's upcoming giant rocket, the Space Launch System. Critics of SLS have suggested that SpaceX could offer better alternatives for NASA's planned large deep space missions, either the future Starship or the Falcon Heavy, which is smaller but already flying. Mr. Bridenstine is in a tough spot, said Phil Larson, a former space advisor during the Obama administration and now an assistant dean at the University of Colorado's Engineering College. That tweet came out of left field and, due to its tone, shines a spotlight on a number of NASA programs that are behind schedule and over budget. How did Elon Musk reply? When asked about Mr. Bridenstine's tweet during an interview with CNN after the Starship event, Mr. Musk replied jokingly, "Did he say commercial crew or SLS?" then broke into laughter. He also said that SpaceX could be ready to launch NASA's astronauts in 3 to 4 months. In another interview after the event, Mr. Musk said that the rockets and the Crew Dragon capsules for two upcoming commercial crew missions would be in Florida soon. The first is an uncrewed test of the abort system to make sure it can whisk the capsule with astronauts to safety in case of the rocket failure on the way to orbit. The second is a demonstration flight that will take two NASA astronauts, Robert Behnken and Douglas Hurley, to the International Space Station. "Actually, there's nothing more we can do from a hardware standpoint," Mr. Musk said. "The hardware is basically done. It's really just a whole bunch of NASA reviews, essentially. Speed up the NASA reviews, we can launch sooner." Mr. Musk also said that only about 5% of SpaceX's resources were devoted to Starship. How did NASA respond to that? In an interview with The Atlantic, Mr. Bridenstine said of Mr. Musk's joking on CNN, "Well, I don't think that's helpful." He was highly doubtful of Mr. Musk's timeline that the first launch with astronauts could occur in 3 to 4 months, pointing out recent test failures. SpaceX successfully sent a Crew Dragon capsule without a crew to the space station in March, but during a subsequent ground test, the capsule was destroyed in an explosion. No one was injured, but SpaceX and NASA had to investigate what happened and fix the problems. Parachutes have also failed in recent tests. "That's going to take probably more time to resolve than the launch abort system," Mr. Bridenstine told The Atlantic. Mr. Bridenstine also said he was not singling out SpaceX. "I've been critical of all contractors that overpromise and underdeliver." On Thursday, Mr. Bridenstine and Mr. Musk provided one consistent story. By the end of the year, there will probably be about 10 drop tests of an improved parachute design, and the Falcon 9 rocket and Crew Dragon capsule for the crewed flight will arrive in Florida. The launch itself would await final safety reviews in the first quarter of next year if all goes well. "We are not going to take any undue risk," Mr. Bridenstine said. With Mr. Behnken and Mr. Hurley also standing next to him on Thursday, Mr. Musk said, "We're not going to do anything those two gentlemen are not comfortable with." Mr. Bridenstine said that his Twitter post about Starship were part of an effort to get contractors to provide realistic budget and schedule estimates. Now what? If delays for SpaceX and Boeing continue past early 2020, NASA will have to consider buying additional seats on Russian Soyuz rockets, which have been the only way that astronauts have been able to get to the International Space Station since 2011. Some of the turmoil is of NASA's own making. In July, Mr. Bridenstine removed William H. Gerstenmaier as the leader of the agency's Human Exploration and Operations Directorate. Kenneth Bowersox, a former astronaut who was Mr. Gerstenmaier's deputy, is leading the part of NASA on an acting basis, and Mr. Bridenstine has yet to announce a permanent replacement. "That announcement is not months away," Mr. Bridenstine said on Thursday. "It is weeks away." NASA is also trying to accelerate work on its Artemis program to send astronauts back to the moon by 2024. What else did they say on Thursday? Mr. Bridenstine said he was not opposed to SpaceX working on Starship. NASA has an interest in seeing Starship be successful, he said. He noted that NASA had provided technical help on aerodynamics as well as test facilities for SpaceX to use. Thank you to SpaceX for being a great partner, Mr. Bridenstine said at the end of the news conference. In our next article, Uber acquires Corner Shop, a grocery delivery startup. Uber has acquired a majority stake in the grocery delivery startup Corner Shop for an undisclosed sum, the company announced on Friday as it seeks to build its food delivery business. The company has looked to expand beyond ride-hailing, particularly since its troubled debut on the public markets in May. Although the growth of its core business has slowed, Uber is building its food and freight delivery businesses, as well as expanding into bicycle and scooter rentals. Corner Shop is active in Chile, Mexico, Peru, and Canada, and Uber plans to add other markets, including the United States. We're excited to partner with the team at Corner Shop to scale their vision and look forward to working with them to bring grocery delivery to millions of consumers on the Uber platform, Dara Khosrowshahi, Uber's chief executive, said in a statement. Corner Shop, which was founded in 2015, has been up for sale before. Walmart tried to acquire it for $225 million in 2018, but Mexican antitrust officials blocked the deal in June. A Corner Shop co-founder, Oscar Hjertensen, announced the collapse of the acquisition on Twitter, advising his social media followers to keep calm and continue ordering avocados. Uber's deal is pending regulatory approval. Uber is the perfect partner as we embark on our quest to bring our unique flavor of on-demand groceries from incredible retail partners to many more countries around the world, Mr. Hjertensen said in the statement. Uber has long dabbled with the notion of transporting goods and items. In the past, under its co-founder and former chief executive, Travis Kalanick, the company experimented with a division called Uber Everything. Born from that, Uber Rush was the company's attempt at an on-demand courier service. The logistics and financial side never worked out, however, and Uber closed the Rush and scaled back some of Uber Everything's ambitions. But the Uber Everything team found a bright spot in food delivery, matching restaurant takeout orders with drivers and bike messengers who work for Uber. That initiative became Uber Eats, one of the company's sources of revenue growth. To date, Uber is losing millions pouring money into expanding Uber Eats, largely because it is subsidizing the costs of the service to gain market share and fend off many competitors such as DoorDash and Grubhub. It is unclear how the math will work for Uber's grocery delivery goals. In the United States, the competition will include Instacart, a startup backed by blue-chip Silicon Valley venture firms, as well as Amazon, which gained an enormous footprint in groceries with its acquisition of Whole Foods in 2017. Article number 4. Does your toothbrush have an app yet? New technology is creating some excitement in the formerly ho-hum world of dental care. When Teresa Gucciardo Perry discovered a cracked crown in her mouth in April, she dreaded the idea of going to a dentist to get it replaced. The Cortland Manor, New York resident has undergone more than 18 root canals procedures. She also has 5 implants with crowns in all but her front teeth. She hated the procedure in which trays of gag-producing putty-like substance were stuffed into her mouth to make impressions. The putty material is just absolutely gross. I want to throw up, said Ms. Gucciardo Perry, 55 years old, and the crown never fits right. I always had to go back. But this time she sought care at the Touro Dental Health Clinic, part of the Touro College of Dental Medicine in Hawthorne, New York, where students learn the latest state-of-the-art techniques. There, her teeth were digitally scanned with the wave of a wand, rather than a bulky goop-filled tray, and a crown was built digitally. It fit perfectly. I was amazed, totally amazed, said Ms. Gucciardo Perry. Digital scanning is among the number of advances being adopted by the dental industry as the sector undergoes a technological metamorphosis. Among the latest inventions, the use of digital scanners and 3D printers to offer same-day crown replacements, smart toothbrushes that talk back to you via a phone app when you're missing an area while brushing, lasers that eliminate the need for an anesthetic, and digital tools that detect oral cancer. Some of these advances had been around for a number of years but had not been widely adopted because of high equipment costs, lack of training, or dentists who were more comfortable with older traditional equipment. Sensing this trend, the Touro College of Dental Medicine opened at New York Medical College in 2016 to train students in both established and cutting-edge technologies. We designed the school to address the practice world of 2030, not the practice world of 1985, said Edward Farkas, Touro's vice dean and chairman of dentistry, and demand has been soaring. We have 3,600 applicants for 113 spaces this year, he said. Larger schools like New York University, Harvard, and the University of Pennsylvania offer similar state-of-the-art training but at a much higher tuition price. Touro charges $57,000 a year compared to $78,000 at New York University and more at Ivy League schools. Until recently, dentistry has largely lagged the medical field when it came to using artificial intelligence and other technology to diagnose or treat medical conditions. For researchers, dentistry didn't attract the big headlines, fame, and potentially lucrative windfalls that came with big medical advances, said Jeff Becker, senior analyst of healthcare strategy at Forrester Research. But that changed as social media took off. These days, people want brighter, whiter, straighter teeth, said Eric Payne, founder and chief executive of Techagogo, a digital startup that connects dentists with technicians for same-day repairs. And dentists are jumping in, plastering before and after photos of their work all over the internet to attract new patients. Around the same time that social media took off, cardiologists were starting to preach the connection between oral health and heart disease. Conditions like gingivitis and gum disease can raise red flags. The heart is pumping that bacteria from the oral cavity throughout your body, said Mr. Payne. If you don't take care of your teeth, all that nastiness in your mouth is going to pump through your body. Suddenly, dentistry became trendy, and young researchers who saw opportunity started bringing tech advances to the dental world. At the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, the top prize in the COSAD competition for student startups went to dental-related technologies in both 2018 and 2019, a first in the contest's 20-year history, said Laura A. Frericks, director of the University of Illinois Research Park, a technology hub for startup companies. So which technologies are leading the dental industry's transformation? Digital scanners, computer-aided design, and manufacturing and 3D printers are among the game changers. A digital scanner is a wand-like device that captures three-dimensional images of the teeth, bite, and surrounding tissue in real time. It's fast, and it eliminates the need for clunky, goop-filled impression trays and messy plaster molds. The images can be sent electronically to a lab within minutes, which speeds up the wait time for patients needing crowns or bridges. A CAD/CAM system allows dentists to make same-day crowns, veneers, and bridges right in their offices. The system captures the digital images, designs the crown virtually, and then sends the design to a milling machine or a 3D printer in the office. Dr. Barbara Jurem, Assistant Director of Digital Dentistry at Touro, recalls recently treating a patient who was about to travel out of the country for 3 months and needed a new crown. She scanned the patient, designed the crown, manufactured it, and cemented it in the office that day. We're talking about a treatment timeline that was 2.5 hours as opposed to 2 visits over the course of 2 weeks, she said. Then there's cone beam technology, which captures high-resolution, three-dimensional X-ray images through a machine that rotates around a patient's head. The cone beam and scanner data allow a surgeon to create surgical guides, which are 3D printed maps that pinpoint exactly how and where dental implants are placed during surgery, said Dr. Akshay Kumar, a periodontist in Hackensack, New Jersey, who uses scanners and cone beam technology in his practice. That's it for Tech Talk for this week. Join us next week for the latest from the technology sector.